Hello, and welcome to EU Untangled, the podcast that unravels EU politics and policies. This is your host, Victor Aguilar. In today's episode, my co-host Alex Roth and I zoom into the European Parliament and its unique, some dare say bizarre, seemingly incomprehensible arrangement of having one official seat but three main places of work stretching across three different European countries. You may be asking yourselves, who decided this? When? How? And most importantly, why? What function does it serve? Does this arrangement work as well as it's supposed to? And if not, should we do something to change it? This discussion is particularly relevant as we approach a new round of European elections in June this year, where European citizens will vote to elect 720 members of the European Parliament across the 27 member states of the European Union. The European Parliament is the only EU institution whose members are directly elected by European citizens, and therefore the only one that directly represents their interests. Sounds important? Well, it kind of is. So buckle up and join us in this discussion. Oh, and don't miss out on the opportunity to vote in the EU elections. They will take place between the 6th and the 9th of June, 2024. You can find all the relevant information on elections.europa.eu. That's right, Europa with an A. elections.europa.eu. Without further ado, welcome to EU Untangled. Hey, Alex, I have a little question for you. What do you think happens once a month in the beautiful, picturesque city of Strasbourg?
Yeah, that's a great question. So Strasbourg is indeed a very nice city, and probably it has something to do with the European Parliament, I guess.
Damn, you're too smart for me, man.
What I heard is that kind of a lot of people move once a month from Brussels, where the European Parliament or where the European parliamentarians normally work, and they move once a month to Strasbourg. So from Belgium to France with all their staff for the European Parliament's sessions there.
That's absolutely right. Once per month, around 4,000 people, including members of the European Parliament, parliamentary staff, and of course, lobbyists, travel from Brussels to Strasbourg, which is more or less a 400-kilometer ride, for the European Parliament's plenary session, which lasts for 4 days, Monday to Thursday. And then they happily go back to Brussels or, you know, the countries that they came from. But the real question is not what happens once a month in Strasbourg. The real question, in my opinion at least, is why? Why do we have this so-called traveling circus from Brussels to Strasbourg? Why does the European Parliament have more than one place of work in different European cities? And does it make sense? And just to say, spoiler alert, the European Parliament actually has three places of work in three different European cities and one seat only, which is Strasbourg, to literally rule them all. So what we're going to do today is untangle this complexity by engaging in an intellectual exercise in the form of a debate. Alex, you will adopt one position in favor of having more than one place of work for the European Parliament, basically keeping the current situation, whereas I will adopt a position against having more than one place of work, meaning changing what we have today. So you will be in favor of more than one seat or place of work for the European Parliament, and I will be in favor of one only. And as a disclaimer for our listeners, I just want to say that none of us, neither Alex nor I, believes 100% in either of these positions or every argument that we will make today. We know that this is not a black or white issue. So we're going to force ourselves to adopt opposing positions and play a role to better understand the reasons in favor and the reasons against in this seemingly never-ending debate on the quote-unquote two seats of the European Parliament. What do you think, Alex?
That sounds fantastic.
You want to start? Show me what you got.
I'm happy to start because first I think we need to get the facts straight. You said there are apparently two seats of the European Parliament. I think, though, this is not 100% correct, because actually there's only one seat, which is Strasbourg, but there are three places of work. And when we talk about the European Parliament, and its places of work. This has been written down in the Treaty of the Functioning of the European Union. Okay, so this is like kind of like one of the base treaties that is ruling how the European Union works. And there it says...
Almost the EU Bible.
Exactly. They're like two Bibles. There's like the big Bible with the general principles. And then there is this treaty on the functioning where they go a bit more in detail. And indeed, in this treaty, they say that in Strasbourg, they're going to have 12 sessions, including the budget sessions. And additional sessions should be held in Brussels, committee meetings in Brussels. However, the General Secretariat of the European Parliament and its departments shall remain in Luxembourg. And then, just fun fact, I also want to share that there's a really hilarious video where parliamentarians are asked why they are like different seats or different places of work, however you call them. I'll drop that link in the show notes.
Sure.
So we have the facts here that there is Strasbourg with this main plenary sessions, Brussels with this day-to-day committee work, and some so-called mini plenaries, like some exceptional plenaries happening there, and Luxembourg. Let's say, like, roughly speaking, most of the administrative and translation work there.
All right. So what you're saying so far is that an argument in favor of the European Parliament having more than one seat is because it's laid down in the European treaties. So it's been set in stone and therefore, you know, it's the law. And then we have like this division of labor where some functions of the parliament are in Strasbourg, others are in Brussels, others are in Luxembourg. Three European capitals, not too far from one another. Is that correct?
More or less correct, exactly. And on top, it's not only any law, it's even the treaty. So the treaty can only be changed by all member states. So it's not something you can just change by a decision of a few people. You need actually a bigger undertaking. And it's also not a setting that has just been created. It's not that kind of like this came out of nothing. It has a history. And the history of the European Parliament, and bear with me, I won't go into too many details because this shouldn't be a history session today, but just to give a few maybe key moments here. The history of your parliament is basically entangled with the history of the European Union. And so the European Union actually was founded much later, before the first European Parliament was actually created. And it's the predecessor of the European Union is what is called the European Coal and Steel Community, or it's one of the predecessor. And so they had an assembly, you know, not a parliament, but they had kind of like a room where they discussed stuff, like the predecessor of the European Parliament. And so they actually met in Strasbourg because in Strasbourg, in the 50s, when they met there, there was already a plenary chamber they could use, which was the plenary chamber of the Council of Europe.
Essentially free riding a chamber that was not theirs.
Exactly. And there was already a house, it's called House of Europe, and there was already some institution there in Strasbourg, namely the Council of Europe, not to be confused with anything that has to do with the European, European Union.
How could we? I mean, the names are so different.
That's probably a content for another episode, to disentangle all the different institutions called something with European and Union and Council and whatsoever. But just to make the point, Strasbourg just happened to be the seat of this predecessor. Just fun fact, actually, the authority, the predecessor of the European Commission, actually, was actually in Luxembourg at that time, but later on moved to Brussels. And so over the decades, then Brussels became more and more the hotspot of most of the political work of the European communities, later Union. And then in the 90s, it was then decided that Brussels would be the seat of the European Commission and Strasbourg would be the principal seat of the seat of the European Parliament. And with this current arrangement, I was saying before that they're also in Brussels and also in Luxembourg. That was put then also in the EU treaty. And so you have a story here where, you know, things don't just fall from sky, but they have been evolving. And even if you think from a current perspective, they don't really make sense, but they just evolved into this current state.
I'm very happy you start off with this argument in favor of it, saying, okay, you know, there is some history behind it. It is laid down in treaties that are complicated to change. I'm guessing that there is more to it as well in terms of the distribution of power among EU member states. But my first argument against having more than one seat for any EU institution is that this actually increases complexity. So in the case of the European Parliament, and here I'm going to, you know, rely on my own experience having worked in the European Parliament for a couple of years, is that what ends up happening in practice with these distributed seats, one in Luxembourg, one in Strasbourg, one in Brussels, is that you end up having some overlapping functions that nobody really understands very well why they work that way. So you have three main buildings in three European capitals that are not necessarily super well connected with one another. And actually, the lines between them are often blurry. You were mentioning that, for instance, in Strasbourg, the plenary sessions take place, and that's true. There are 12 plenary sessions per year. So everybody travels 12 times a year to Strasbourg and back. But the truth is that, as you already hinted at, in Brussels, you also have some mini plenary sessions here and there. So they last only for a day and a half, but they still take place in Brussels, where you also have a hemicycle, where, you know, each parliamentarian has a seat.
Just to explain, a hemicycle, you mean that the room where people meet, no?
That's right. It's literally kind of like half a circle, where the members of the European Parliament, the MEPs, they sit, you know, according to their political groups, and then they vote on the issues at stake, on EU legislation and reports. As I was saying, while it's true that the plenary sessions take place in Strasbourg, there are also mini plenary sessions or part sessions that take place in Brussels. You mentioned that Luxembourg is mostly the administrative seat of the parliament, but in reality, there are a lot of administrative activities that take place in Brussels too. For instance, human resources is in Brussels. And then in Strasbourg, while committee and political group work should take place in Brussels, they also take place in Strasbourg during plenary sessions. This is actually a very complex setup where the lines, even though maybe in the treaty they should be fairly clear, in practice they're a bit blurrier. And I personally don't think this works in the most efficient way.
So you're saying we should at least put this in one seat together just to literally also be more efficient and even save some costs.
And also reduce the complexity in the day-to-day work. Like, just imagine having to move around 4,000 people between these places of work. It's just crazy. Like, it takes so much time. It costs so much money. I mean, I don't think in today's world it makes as much sense as it did back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s.
Mm. It's good you raised that point, because it's kind of like connected also to this whole efficiency argument, which you might raise later on. But I think it's a bit tricky, because I think things should be easy to understand and also efficiently done. But these are, for me, often very business terms. And that's fine. You know, you run a business and you want to be efficient, want to make money. But political systems don't work that way. And especially democratic systems. If I may be a bit provocative here, but if you want to have an easy system, then we can choose a dictatorship and then we know who is in charge, you know? And that's it.
Wow, that's quite a quantum leap. I never talked about a dictatorship.
I just want to make my point clear. So, of course, I'm not stretching it very far to make like the point extremely clear. But then in democracies, things are always a bit more complicated. You know, we are electing a lot of people that are sitting in parliaments. We're paying them a lot of money. Their staff are paid. And you could argue, yeah, why do you need so many of those? And, you know, so there's always a point to make that democracies are inefficient. And now we're talking here about the European democracy, which... in its core, it's represented by the European Parliament. And here we have the struggle that we even have to find a system where 27 member states are well represented. The EU has a motto, you know, a motto called United in Diversity. And the EU, after all, is not a federated state like the United States of America, for instance, or Germany, which... has sub-states, but then there's still one capital. It's still a mixture between a federation, but also a confederation. So it hasn't really decided whether it's just a union of different states or actually a state in itself. And often people are saying, yeah, you know, Brussels is the capital of the European Union, but that's actually not really correct. Although Brussels wants to be the clear capital, it is nowhere stipulated. There's no definition of the European capital. So it's not a priori clear why everything should be located in Brussels. In fact, there are four institutional seats of the EU. There are four important cities where the most important European institutions are located, which is Brussels, with the Parliament, the Commission, the Council. Then we have Strasbourg, talked about. Luxembourg, also mentioned before. In Luxembourg, there's also the European Court of Justice. And we have Frankfurt, often forgotten, with the seat of the European Central Bank. So overall, already there, we have like a decentralized structure put in the treaties, you know, put in like laid out. And on top there, like a bunch, really, like many, many different EU institutions that are not like fundamental, but they're very important and serve very important functions, and they're spread over whole Europe. And to come back to my argument before about inefficiencies of a democracy, I think this even applies even more to the European Union, because it is a union of democracies. And so I think we can also allow some inefficiencies and some maybe additional complexities to make this whole thing work. And that could also actually be to have two seats of a European Parliament, if it serves to also to spread out a bit the power away from Brussels only into the different states. We could even discuss whether it would make sense to move everything to Strasbourg, but this is maybe a different point or a point on top. But for sure, a stronger seat in Strasbourg even would even help also counter the argument that says Brussels has decided. You know, at the moment, Brussels is like everything, and people are really not understanding for good reasons who decides what in Brussels, because we have a lot of institutions there. So maybe, you know, a stronger seat in Strasbourg would even help to say, well, wait, if Brussels decides, it's mostly the Council of the European Union. Maybe the Commission puts forward some great ideas, but the Parliament would decide in Strasbourg, which they do. But since they have these two seats, or actually the three seats, you know, or the three workplaces, whatever you call them, things are very, very difficult, you know. So I'm making a point here rather for Strasbourg, but I think still the setting of like spreading out different seats, I think we should still value.
I'm actually really glad you're making this point, because I'm not advocating for the seat of the European Parliament to be in Brussels. What I'm arguing is that the European Parliament should have one seat or / one place of work instead of two or three. And speaking of democracy and of the EU being a decentralized system, it would be relevant to ask parliamentarians, who are the representatives of the people, what their preference is. I find it actually revealing that large numbers of members of the European Parliament and their parliamentary staff have called for putting an end to monthly trips to Strasbourg. Some of them actually want to hold parliamentary sessions in Brussels only, but their argument is that it is not efficient nor convenient to move between Brussels and Strasbourg every month. This was reflected in a study conducted in 2011, where 9 out of 10 MEPs surveyed and their assistants said that they prefer Brussels. And this result had also been reflected in previous studies conducted in 2010, 2006, and the year 2000. The criticism was clear. It included poor transport options and suboptimal accommodation and working environment that have a serious impact on the professional performance of members of the European Parliament and their staff. And just drawing on my experience working in the European Parliament, I can confirm you have fewer and smaller offices, less IT equipment. The building is also more complicated to navigate. Of course, this is not the most important to focus on when it comes to the functioning of a democracy, but this still has an impact on the day-to-day work of the European Parliament. On top, not everyone who works in the European Parliament actually travels to Strasbourg once per month, which means that you still have to liaise with your colleagues who stayed in Brussels, with the administrators that are in Luxembourg, etc., etc. So it's messy. What I find very interesting is that members of the European Parliament have tried several times to put to a vote and push the European Council to change the treaties and have one place of work for the European Parliament in one city. As an example, we have resolutions that were passed in 2013 calling for one seat, another in 2017, and one more in 2019. Now, none of these resolutions amounted to much, there was no change, but they speak clearly and loudly, in my opinion, about what members of the European Parliament and their staff prefer.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with you. I mean, of course, important that that the members of the very same institutions also have a say where the institution is. But overall, it should not be them deciding that, no? I mean, no one is forced to work at the European Parliament. If it's so bad working there, moving once a month to Brussels, I would say, well, then, I mean, it's not the only possibility to work in Europe. So, I mean, there are other jobs. If this is really such a hurdle, then, it sounds maybe a bit arrogant. You know, we're talking about here again about an institution that is also highly symbolic. It's not any random company, you know, that I don't like working in that company because it's based in the city or I have to travel. Well, then take a different job, you know, if possible. Of course, sometimes it's not as easy as I say it. But with the European Parliament, it is a bit more than that. And talking about symbolism, there has been many, or there are many people that say we should keep it at least in Strasbourg. Again, I'm not saying whether maybe 2-3 seats is better than one, but at least the Strasbourg symbol, I think, is a very strong one. And I'm not the only one who says that. There are a lot of politicians from different countries, especially, of course, from France, but also from Germany, saying that having chosen Strasbourg and keeping Strasbourg as a seat of the European Parliament is important, mainly as a symbol of the Franco-German reconciliation after decades of war. And just to give you a few important key facts here without going into, without starting a Strasbourg history podcast here. But Strasbourg was in the medieval times, so we talk now 1,000 to 500 years ago, a part of what was called the Holy Roman Empire, which you can see as some kind of predecessor of Germany. And it has also this name, which obviously resounds kind of German, Strasbourg. So there was a German influence, let's say, there. And then in 1681, it was occupied by France under the famous Louis XIV. And then after the German-French War of 1871, the Germans took it back. And now it's part of the newly founded German Empire. And then after the First World War, it's part of France again, after Germany lost the war, after the First World War. And in the Second World War, Germany took it back, and so for another 5 years, it stayed in the Nazi Empire. And then in 1945, once the Nazis lost, it's now, since then, it's part of France.
That's a very long game of ping pong between Germany and France.
Yeah, it is really a ping pong game.
And it's not clear to me who has won the match.
Well, I mean, I think it's not about winning or losing here. It's just, I think that would be exactly the wrong message
Well, I think that during the Holy Roman Empire and the two World Wars, it was pretty much about winning or losing.
Exactly. But the point is that hopefully we are beyond that. And I think that's exactly the point of Strasbourg as a city of peace, that yes, it is now part of France, but I would say you would find very few people in Germany saying, Strasbourg should be again a German city. And I think this is really kind of like, this boils down to the core of the sense of the European Union, at least how it was founded like decades ago as a peace project. Whether the symbol is still strong enough, I think we can also debate that. But I think to acknowledge that fact, I think that's important, no?
Yeah. Just jokingly, I'm not sure how peaceful Strasbourg is during plenary sessions of the European Parliament. I have the feeling that Strasbourg is quite peaceful and idyllic until the moment that this bunch of parliamentarians, staff and lobbyists arrive for their plenary sessions, and then it's boom, mayhem.
I hope it's more peaceful than like during many times of war in the Second World War. I mean, not to put the bar too high here, but I guess we are talking about a different peace and war.
Absolutely, good. That's why I said jokingly. You mentioned something before when discussing whether parliamentarians should have a say on where the parliament's places of work are, and you said if you don't like the job, then don't take it and go somewhere else. I just want to quickly remark that I don't think that as a parliamentarian you choose the job. I think that you are chosen to do the job. You are elected because others chose you and put you in that position. Of course, I agree with you that members of the European Parliament and their staff have enough benefits and amazing work facilities. So it's hard to make an argument about the need to improve anything in their day-to-day work. However, I do think that their places of work have to be fit for purpose so that elected representatives can do their job properly. Now, part of the argument that I have is that it is a lot harder and more expensive to maintain three huge buildings in three different cities in three different countries than just one. I don't mind so much where the seat of the parliament is, but I do care about it being difficult or costly to run. If the EU were to channel its resources into one single place of work, that would make it much easier and cheaper to maintain and also more efficient. You spoke about the symbolism of Strasbourg, which I find a very relevant and beautiful argument. However, we need to weigh symbolism against an argument that is a lot less nice. A European Union that is perceived as inefficient can fit anti-EU sentiments. And actually, the cost associated with maintaining two or three places of work for one EU institution only is possibly the one point on which green and far-right politicians agree. This is when you know that something is definitely off. Quoting a former German member of the European Parliament, Joe Leinen, who hailed from the center-left Social Democrats, this, quote-unquote, provides cheap ammunition for populists and Eurosceptics. And I think that it's interesting that in an attempt to maintain this image of a unified, peaceful Europe where power is decentralized, this argument can be twisted to say that Europe is inefficient, expensive, and a merry mess.
I think you make a good point here. Comes down again to the inefficiency argument, which kind of like also is related to the complexity argument. Probably there's no right or wrong here. But yeah, I have to say this is of course a point we have to take into account. But Vic, if you talk about costs, I mean, we also have to at least acknowledge again the status quo and moving away, let's say the parliament away from Strasbourg to make it more efficient and to, as for instance, put everything together in Brussels. That would mean kind of like a big.
Well, I never said Brussels.
Yeah,
I've argued about one seat or place of work for the European Parliament. Arguing whether this one seat should be in Brussels, Strasbourg, or perhaps even Luxembourg, or, you know, any other European city, is part of another discussion.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, and I think we should be a bit, maybe we should at this moment maybe talk about it. Would you really think that moving everything to Strasbourg would really solve the issue? Because there is obviously a lot of exchange between the Parliament and the Commission. Also, if lobbyists meet with parliamentarians and with people from the Commission. And I'm just wondering whether the whole circus, what you said in the beginning, the traveling circus, may would even intensify if we move everything, if everything is concentrated in Strasbourg or in Luxembourg or in any other city except Brussels. Because obviously, the rest still stays in Brussels.
That's probably a good argument not to move everything to Strasbourg, but you could still keep Brussels as the single place of work.
Exactly.
Or as the seat of the European Parliament. But that's a different conversation. There are a lot of sunk costs from having the European Commission and the European Council in Brussels, and since these two EU institutions are the most powerful in terms of their decision-making power, it makes everything else gravitate around them.
Yeah.
But again, that's a different kind of discussion. For now, I suggest we focus on whether having one or more seats for a single EU institution, in this case the European Parliament, actually makes sense.
Exactly. But I think it's a discussion that is important to take into account, because I think what most people say, if they talk about one seat for the European Parliament, I would assume that most people would say, and also most of the people that you have quoted in most of the numbers, would say, let's move everything to Brussels. For the obvious points, everything is in one place, you have very short travel distances, maybe already better facilities. And that would mean that obviously the region of Strasbourg as a city, and also the region of Strasbourg in Germany and in France, in bordering Germany and in France, would of course have a huge loss. So you also have to at least give them something in return, so they can compensate also for the economic cost. At least this is what a lot of politicians, mostly again from France, obviously say. I have to also say personally, I don't find that argument not one of the best or strongest one, but I think it's also something we have to consider at least. If we talk about efficiencies, that means costs, and this is also cost that will occur, at least for the region around and in Strasbourg.
You're right. This was particularly evident during the COVID-19 pandemic, especially during 2020, when the European Parliament suspended its monthly travels to Strasbourg because of the health situation. And some articles came out stating how the European Parliament traveling to Strasbourg meant some 30,000 jobs. So a chunk of the of Strasbourg's local economy does rely on the European Parliament going to Strasbourg once per month. You have hotels, you have restaurants, taxi drivers, security guards, a number of professions that are impacted if suddenly members of the European Parliament stop going to Strasbourg.
Yeah, and to take your side on that, I would say this should not be kind of like the decisive argument when it comes to designing a better institutional framework, a better institutional setup for the European Union to just look at, you know, oh my God, there are people that lose a job in Strasbourg. That would feel a bit disproportionate because after all, the European Parliament should represent 450 million people in Europe and should design good policies and pass good laws. And as what you said before, if people are not happy in the Parliament traveling around, then, you know, I think we have a bit of an issue here, a very localized problem with a very more common problem. However, though, as you also rightly said, there are a lot of people that would actually suffer from that. And that also, at least, we have to acknowledge, because also that is something we need to take into account if we want to find a solution for that.
Absolutely. Here we're talking of the local economy of Strasbourg. But then there is this other argument that I want to make now, which is the larger economy. There are tangible economic, environmental, and time costs of the European Parliament having more than one place of work. There are quite recent estimates of how much traveling between Brussels and Strasbourg costs, but a 2014 analysis by the European Court of Auditors estimated this cost at 114 million euros per year. In other words, if the European Parliament were to relocate to Brussels, it would save 114 million euros every year. And on top of this, the auditors estimated that it would have a one-off saving of 616 million euros, the relocation. Now, these figures are from 2014, and it's difficult to compare them with the actual situation 10 years later. But if we look at the European Parliament's budget for this year, 2024, which is 2.1 billion euros, 114 million euros represents a bit over 5% of the budget. This share, if you adjust prices and costs, is probably higher now, but even keeping it at 5% is not negligible. 114 million euros could be spent differently, and some would argue they could be spent better. Interestingly, the European Court of Auditors estimated that moving European Parliament services and staff from Luxembourg to Brussels would also generate savings, but they would be marginal, at around 13 million per year. Still a considerable amount of money, but proportionally less significant. Now, in terms of environmental costs, the estimates are varied. Some analysts put them at 10,000 tons of CO2 emissions per year. Others put it as high as 20,000 tons of CO2 emissions per year. These are pre-pandemic figures, when the traveling situation was quote-unquote business as usual. But then, of course, the pandemic disrupted everything. So now, even though the European Parliament has come back to Strasbourg for plenary sessions, the amount of traveling is not the same and the dynamics are still different from before. An interesting fact, though, is that two-thirds of MEPs, members of the European Parliament, fly when going to Strasbourg or when traveling back from Strasbourg to Brussels or to their home countries. This is according to the mayor of Strasbourg, who happens to belong to a Green Party. You can imagine that this creates an incentive for airlines to keep additional flights between Strasbourg and other European cities during the plenary session. And there is this report that quotes the European Parliament's 2019 environmental analysis, showing that the CO2 footprint for traveling between Brussels and Strasbourg was only 2.4% of the European Parliament's total CO2 emissions. This same report mentions that a larger share, around 16% of CO2 emissions of the European Parliament, is due to the travel of parliamentarians more generally, largely by plane and from their home countries.
I mean, sorry, you can make the point that whether they fly to Strasbourg from Greece or Italy or Germany or to Brussels doesn't really make a difference.
Right. That's exactly what this report points out. In terms of environmental costs, it's not so significant. I actually had a quick look at the 2023 environment statement of the European Parliament, and from what I understand, this hasn't changed a lot. traveling between Brussels and Strasbourg still accounts for around 2.4% of the total CO2 emissions of the European Parliament, so this has remained kind of stable. Now, we have to take this with a pinch of salt. A, because it's always possible I may have misunderstood the European Parliament's environmental statement, and B, because we're still not back to quote-unquote normal conditions after the COVID-19 pandemic. Many of the consequences and disruptions from the pandemic still linger on, and we don't have yet a reference year post-pandemic to make meaningful comparisons. And since we're talking about environmental costs, it's also important to take into account the CO2 emissions and the energy efficiency of the buildings themselves. It turns out that the European Parliament buildings in Strasbourg are actually a lot more energy efficient than those in Brussels. So Brussels buildings consume 3 times more energy than those in Strasbourg. Granted, buildings in Brussels are also bigger and they are used more often, but still, it's a big difference. What is more interesting is that according to the latest environmental statement of the European Parliament, in 2022, the Parliament buildings in Strasbourg generated more than half of the electricity they consumed from renewable sources on site. I find that quite impressive. Whereas in Brussels, this figure was just above 1%, which I find quite underwhelming. I have to say that the European Parliament does have plans to renovate its buildings in Brussels to make them more environmentally friendly, but this will of course take some time. The main point is that there is an environmental cost to traveling back and forth and to maintaining several buildings in different locations. Now, the last cost that I mentioned earlier on is in terms of time, the time required to commute between Brussels and Strasbourg. We know that there is no direct train line between these two cities. So if you want to move from Brussels to Strasbourg, you have to do a couple of stopovers elsewhere. This is not exactly the case during plenary sessions because the European Parliament books 2 charter trains every month to take as many staff as possible from Brussels to Strasbourg.
That's what you once referred to as the Hogwarts Express?
That's right. That's right. Once per month, on the Monday morning of the European Parliament's plenary week, you can head to Brussels South Station, Gare du Midi, and find a merry party of people with parliament badges and suitcases lining up to board the train that will take them to Strasbourg. Except, of course, when that train is diverted to Disneyland Paris, like reported by Politico in October last year.
Took the wrong tracks. Happens to the best.
So, of course, doing away with this traveling would deprive us from these unforgettable and cartoonish moments, but it would certainly make parliamentary work more efficient.
I'm, again, happy you're mentioning efficiency and here the costs, because that leads to my last argument in the defense of keeping the status quo. You talked about emissions, costs, efficiency, again, can be measured nicely, and I think this is all makes a lot of sense. But I think we also have to look at other costs, and I mean by that political costs. I totally agree. If we would redesign a perfect European federation, a European Union, however you want to call it, probably we wouldn't do it the way it is currently done. Not even sure everything might be concentrated in Brussels, you know? Things are as they are because of historical reasons. And yes, so we could do things differently. But the thing is just to change these engraved structures, it's just very, very difficult. And I mean, just look at your PC or Mac keyboard, you know, the ordering of the letters is just not, we know it's not most efficient. It would be better if we have a different system, but we're all used to that. And changing the layout of that would be just super difficult, not technically, but just like organizationally. This is a bit similar to like moving or changing this big puzzle, you know? Because I fear that keeping on this debate and also investing time, money, but especially political efforts in changing the setup, this would actually be, in my opinion, a waste of political energy and political force, political power. And especially if we are now in the beginning of 2024, and there's so much happening on the European level, and there are so many challenges the European Union as a whole, but also the individual member states are facing, talking about AI, industry, decarbonization. I think just we have really bigger fish to fry than discussing and more efficient in terms of cost arrangement for the European Parliament. And that also goes a bit back to my argument before that we just have to accept sometimes inefficiencies in democracies, especially in these European settings where a lot of things don't make sense, but we just have them because of history and we just have them because we have to make some people happy, whether we like it or not. And I would just make this as my concluding argument for actually keeping the setting as it is.
I have to say that might be one of the best arguments in favor of sticking to the European Parliament's multiple places of work, even if it seems nonsensical. Because it makes you question whether changing the current arrangement is a fight worth fighting. Although I would argue that just because you have spent all your money playing Texas Hold'em, it doesn't mean you have to keep betting. And fair enough, we have invested a lot in the current three places of work arrangement, but if the numbers and the evidence point to significant savings, and if we suspect that the House of EU Democracy could function a bit better, in a less confusing way, and more efficiently if we were to have one single seat or one single place of work for the European Parliament, then we should not hold back from rethinking the status quo and doing something about it. But then, on the other hand, if the analysis also suggests that achieving this would require the unanimous agreement of all EU member states, which is actually the case, to change the EU treaties and agree on a single seat for the European Parliament, wherever that may be, then perhaps it is futile to continue engaging in wishful thinking. So perhaps we just need to accept, as you will said, that this is the price of European democracy. Muchas gracias for listening to today's episode. For more content, make sure to follow us on X, also known as Twitter, at EU_untangled, and on Facebook and Instagram at EU.untangled. We also have a Mastodon account, EU_untangled@EUpolicy.social. You can find EU Untangled on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Remember to give us a rating to help others discover the podcast. You can find all past episodes on our website, untangled-podcast.eu. And of course, you can also drop us an email, mail@untangled-podcast.eu. We would love to hear from you. See you next time.